Every Woman is a feminist show that highlights the struggles, triumphs, and accomplishments of women and girls and the men who support them. Every Woman includes a rich intersection of female voices that represent a wide range of ethnicities, social and economic status, as well as political and spiritual beliefs, with the purpose to enact social, political, environmental, and economic change. The views and opinions expressed on Every Woman are those of the hosts and the guests and do not necessarily represent the views and opinions of Midcoast Radio Project Incorporated, KKFI staff, board, or management.
And good afternoon, KKFI listeners, and welcome to another episode of Every Woman. I am your host and engineer today, Rachel. Joining me in the studio is my co-host, Una. How are you doing, Una?
I'm doing okay, Rachel. Just day number 57 in the misery of COVID recovery or something like that.
Oh, my.
Had to get up and get a drink and gasp for breath for 5 minutes after walking, but things are good.
Things are good. Well, I'm glad you could join me here today.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Also joining me via Zoom is our other co-host, the fabulous Fiona. Hi, Fiona.
Rachel, and I even managed to remember to unmute myself for a change this time.
I know. Like I said, that's one of the key words of 2020, pivot, and hey, you're still on mute. How have you been doing?
Okay, I may actually have to embroider a sampler or something about, oops, I'm still on mute.
That's a great idea. I love that. Well, I'm so glad you could join us, and I'm glad that you both are on the mend from your COVID experience. So,
thank you.
I am so excited to introduce our guest this week. She is a woman I admire very much, and she has one of the most eclectic and successful careers that I have ever heard of, honestly. She is a sustainability consultant, a Gallup certified strengths coach, and a theater artist. She has a background in both private and nonprofit sectors, and she prides herself on her work with strategic action planning and education and organizational development. She founded the Remember Project back in 2015 and served as the executive director of Festival Theater in St. Croix Falls, Wisconsin, and she is also a life cycle celebrant. And frankly, I could go on and on and on and on, but then I wouldn't have any time to talk with her. So, without further ado, please welcome my special guest live via Zoom from St. Paul, Minnesota, Danette McCarthy. Hi, Danette.
Hi there, Rachel. So nice to meet you, Fiona and Una. It's great to be with you today.
Yes, thanks so much for joining us. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. So, as I said, I could go on and on listing all of the amazing things you've done. And so I would really like to start off by you giving me a little insight on your origin story and your squiggly line story. How on earth did you end up doing so many things?
Well, origin story and squiggly line story seems to be the perfect way to describe it. I was 6 years old when my family moved back to their home area in northwest Wisconsin from Los Angeles. And I suspect that that major change was actually, just had a lot to do with maybe a restlessness and a curiosity. But I call the life that I had in a small, rural, northwest Wisconsin town an idyllic, free-range childhood. We didn't have a lot of adult supervision minute by minute, hour by hour. And the town I grew up in at that time was 850 people, and we lived on the edge of town. And so between walking and running with dogs in the woods and exploring ponds and later having horses and having a very vibrant 4-H club where I got a chance to learn a lot and being involved in sports and the arts, I just think that the cast was set that I would explore and venture and follow that squiggly line.
Yeah, that's so you're sort of just drawn that way, kind of. That's just how you were.
I think so. I think that is experientially, and, you know, that whole, I believe that most of the nature-nurture argument has been satisfied, and we look at both now. But I do think that both played a role. And then I became a young mother. I wasn't yet 20 years old. I had left college for a while. And I believe that the birth of my first child, her 41st birthday was yesterday.
Oh, my. That is
I believe, yep, I believe the birth of my first child perhaps really saved me from an excessive lifestyle in certain ways. Being a young mom, and I hadn't really done much babysitting, it was a time of great learning and great surprises. I had been an athlete in high school as well as being involved in the arts. And I think I had this huge awakening about what it really means to take care of young children. And to this day, I have a deep and purposeful regard for our cultural necessity to take better care of young children. So then after the birth of my second child, I was able to go back to college when Chris was a year old. And that was a great experience to be a non-traditional student full time and follow my love of education and theater and literature. Sure. So that's how I came to graduating from college.
So what prompted you to go back to college as a non-traditional student and as a young mother?
Well, at the time I was, I had spent about 5 years in banking, and I knew that wasn't, you know, really satisfying my soul.
Can't
and
imagine.
it's an important career area.
Yes.
I was just feeling that I didn't have quite enough time and energy for creative pursuits, nor my the call that I had to try to do good in the community. So when I first went back to college, I was an elementary education major.
Oh.
And I was very interested in gifted underachievement. I was really disturbed that very, very bright kids were dropping through the cracks. And in Wisconsin at that time, something like 75% of boys who were in juvenile detention at the state level had IQs 2 and 3 standard deviations above the norm. And this troubled me to no end. And I also have a younger sister who was fairly delinquent by fifth grade. And so I was really, you know, attentive to this. And I thought, you know, I'll go into education. I was always interested in that. But by the time I was a junior in college, it was pretty clear that I was aware that I just didn't think I would fit into the confines of working within a standard school system. So sure. I left the School of Education, and I graduated from college with a dual major in English and theater and no teaching certificate, kind of like no fire insurance.
Nice. That is a very squiggly line. Yes, that's really interesting. Mm-hmm. I know one of the things that we were talking about last week was your idea of process-based arts education. Can you describe to me what that is and why that's important to you?
Yeah, it's really, really important to me. So the simple definition is that if you looked at only two types of arts education, and there aren't just two, but if you looked at just two, process-based or product-based, product is just that. It's going to focus a lot on that end product. You're going to help take your student through some very discrete and distinct steps toward that finished product, and it has a place and a role and use, et cetera, et cetera. And it interests me less than process-based arts education, which means that we're going to be exploring, we're going to be very student-led, no matter the age of the student, and we're going to experiment. And in the process of exploring, we will find what art discipline calls to us, what style of art is calling to us, no matter the discipline, and we're going to take a really focused embracing of the fact that there's so much individual difference, and that by introducing process to folks, we're actually asking them to turn to that expert inside of them, to look deeper into their soul about what is calling to them from an artistic standpoint.
Can you give me a concrete example of what that might look like?
Yeah. for many years, I was the director of arts education at a community arts center. And one of the things that we did there in the summer times, we held creativity camp for children ages 5 to 12. Mm-hmm. So with a process-based approach and cross-curriculum, we would choose a theme. Let's just say we chose a theme like the solar system. So for a week with 75 or 80 children, we would explore the solar system through process-based arts education. So let's say we're in a painting class. Instead of guiding our students through making a painting of the solar system, we might read some stories about the solar system. We might look at some mythology around the solar system. We would certainly only provide three primary colors plus black and white.
Right.
And we would then begin the process of having the students respond to what they had heard and what they were talking about. And you would have, if you had 12 students in the class, you would have 12 radically different paintings. And that was often the sign that you were really turning the leadership right over to the student.
Yeah.
And then in the other classes, we would do versions of the same thing. If we're doing a dance education class that's process-based, we're really focused on movement and what does my body do and how do you move like a shooting star or how do you move, what would that look like? And we don't show the student, we ask the student.
Right.
And we explore with the student.
Oh my goodness. I think that if I would have had that sort of process-based arts education, I would have been more able to draw and to paint. I was always so intimidated by art classes, and I think that's why I ended up being in lighting design, because it was so much more abstract. Anytime I was asked to put pen to paper, I was always intimidated. I'm like, oh, this doesn't look like a solar system, or that doesn't look like a flower. Yeah, and it ended up really kind of suppressing that urge inside me.
Me too, definitely. I think we had a slightly better process in English for creative writing, but art was very much, you will learn to do stuff in pencil, and then you will learn to do stuff in pastels, and then you'll get to do stuff with paints. And if it's not very good, you will be told it's not very good, and the teacher will stand over your shoulder and intimidate you and make it even worse, because then you'll tense up and everything could go to hell.
Yes.
And doesn't that just break your heart?
Oh, yeah.
You know, I think, I haven't really done this study. I'm sure someone has. But I really think that the Industrial Revolution really, really had a negative impact on a lot of the exploration that children in particular need to do. And the thing is, that almost all of us, if we roll the clocks back to like first, second, third grade, we can remember who the student was in the classroom who was the best at drawing horses or the best at singing. We can almost remember that person like that. And what that also indicates to me is that if that wasn't you, then you were saying, I'm not good enough. I'm not that good. And then you would become, as you said, Rachel, you would become more reluctant to even try. You would not feel success. And to me, that's just not okay.
No, it isn't. It's heartbreaking to even hear, actually. Yeah, it's so much better to sort of foster that raw creativity into whatever medium you're doing. I loved when you were talking about, you know, let's move like a shooting star. That's kind of fantastic, mm-hmm. especially when you're younger and just, you know, you can just kind of do that and just cut loose and it doesn't matter.
It's also fun when you're older.
I'll have to try that later, I guess. So you do so many varied things. I've listed out several. Do you have a favorite thing that you like to focus on or something that you find particularly fulfilling in the things that you do?
I think the favorite thing is anything in which I can be in a place to encourage somebody else. And I think that might be why I like so many things, is that you never know which door you're going to go through when you're meeting someone. So if I have a chance to be wholly present with another person and hear them and be in dialogue, we never know which door we might go through. Because even well before the pandemic, but certainly now, there are just so many people who feel a sense of longing for the thing that they most want to do, or a sense of trying to find the path. And I want to encourage people to look inside, because I think we're born with that promise, and then we do some forgetting.
No, I think that's dead on. So you talk a lot. Is that your idea, your concept of being present with someone and allowing them to grow? Is that what led you to strengths coaching?
I think eventually. Okay. At first, what brought me there is I had never heard of the tool. The first time that I encountered it, and I've always been interested in tools like that. I studied, when I was still an education major in college, I studied the Myers-Briggs type inventory, and I was very interested in these tools that help us with better self-understanding. Well, StrengthsFinder was appealing to me on so many levels. Number one, it comes from the world of positive psychology, and it comes from that place of asset development. However, in the first 5 years of my relationship with the tool, it was all about me. It was about using this information to help me really kind of get my own act together. Like, why am I struggling with this? Why am I such a workaholic? Why? And it was extremely helpful to me, extremely. And then I started imagining, well, what would happen if I were a certified coach? What would I do with that? I knew that I loved working with teams. So it was a hunch. It was a hunch that this tool could be invaluable to me when I worked with teams. And now I also work with individuals this way. And my hunch was right. It is an incredible tool to help me be a successful encourager of other people.
So you actually sought this tool out to help yourself to begin with.
I didn't even seek it out. I was part of a program through the University of St. Thomas, and it was, I believe it's changed quite a bit since that time, but it was called the Executive Directors Leadership Institute. And in that 10-month program, one of the first things we did was to take the StrengthsFinder inventory, the StrengthsFinder survey, and I started becoming quite a big fan of what I was learning from that process.
That's really fascinating. Can you talk me through a little bit about the process? You talk about the StrengthsFinder inventory. So if I am someone who wants to seek that out, what is involved exactly?
There's a couple ways to do it, and it's really very accessible. So Gallup, most people know that name from their incredible work in doing surveys.
Sure.
Gallup bought StrengthsFinder from the founder, Don Clifton, back around 2002. And a person can just go onto the Gallup website and take it if they want, or they can connect with a Gallup certified coach. And I think there are actually all kinds of versions of them out there. But you usually need to set aside 30 to 45 minutes, and then you do this online survey, and within seconds of being done, you'll get your top five of 34 discrete strengths or strengths themes. And there are printouts and reports available to you immediately so that you can begin your own discovery process. You don't have to work with a coach at all to be able to learn and gain from the StrengthsFinder process.
And so as a coach, you see someone, they've taken the inventory, you see this big list. How do you approach then that your client or this person you're trying to encourage? How does that work?
Oh, I love this question, because you actually just helped me see something I didn't see before. I approach it just like I do with a child painting. It's process-based. It's an act of discovery. So yes, I would look at the results with this person, and then we would talk. And what I would do is focus as much as I can on listening. What did you discover? What did you see from your report and your findings that resonated with you? What surprised you? And then the conversation might go into, are there things in your life today that you're struggling with, that's getting in your way? Is there something that you're longing for? So we would go through this process of being in dialogue around that sense of what strengths are being fed and which ones are being starved.
Right. And the thing I find fascinating about it is that you can actually lean on a strength too much, and you can actually overuse a strength, so it actually becomes a weakness for yourself, which is kind of a Absolutely. Fascinating way to think about it.
Absolutely. And I believe everybody who thinks about that can recognize that without even taking a StrengthsFinder survey. You know, any strength can be a weakness if it's getting in your way of success. So let's just say you love to run, and that feeling is exhilarating, and you're a strong and fit runner, and you want to run marathons. But guess what? If you don't run properly, if you don't take care of yourself well, if you just run and run and run and run, you're probably going to hurt your body physically. So that's just one kind of example.
I thought you were going to bring up pickleball. It's like, Rachel, if you play pickleball 10 hours a day, you have no time to do anything else. It sounds a little bit
Well,
like
I don't think you're there yet. Your pickleball career looks just fascinating to me.
Yes, it's very burgeoning. So, you talked a little bit about working with teams. How does StrengthsFinder help you in a team or like in a collaborative environment?
Well, this is incredibly important and valuable. So when a team is flowing and working well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, you know, there's rarely any need for outside help.
Right.
But even teams that are functioning well can function better when they have a clearer sense of their individual and group strengths. Now, most of the time, of course, when I'm called in to help a team, it's because they're struggling with something.
Right.
And so, again, it's this idea of let's first know yourself. And then in knowing yourself, you can better understand what is motivating you, what is getting in your way. And as a team, as you get to know the discrete strengths, dominant supporting strengths of the people around you, I believe you can better appreciate other people's perspectives. You can better understand what is getting in their way. And then again, together, you can make some really important decisions about the team. You know, are we in the right role? Are we supporting each other to the best of our ability? Are we coming all in? Are we coming to our team with a sense of candor? Those are things that you can explore together through an instrument that brings some new language to the team.
And, you know, it sounds a little to me like a little bit like Moneyball, like the approach to baseball by looking at statistics and saying, you know, what we need is we need people to get on base more. And it doesn't matter if you hit a lot of home runs, but you score runs. Is it sort of like that where you can put people with complementary strengths together in teams?
I love that analogy because sometimes, yes. And what's even better is, I want to try to bring it back to baseball because I love baseball so much. You would be able to say, oh my gosh, Rachel is having a really difficult time bunting or drag bunting or whatever. We need to look at some other strengths of Rachel's and see if we can possibly turn up the volume, turn it up a bit on one of those strengths so that we can actually be more successful.
I just want to say how much it warms my heart that there's another baseball fan on the radio on this program with me, because every time I bring up a sports analogy, my other co-hosts just sort of roll back their eyes and go, I don't know what that is.
Well, they'll love this then.
In the comments in chat when you were talking, I had actually put darn sports ball and a tongue sticking out smiley.
It did not go unnoticed.
Hopefully, Fiona, you will like this. One of the reasons why when I went back to college, I studied theater and I didn't continue to play sports or become a sports coach is that I believe that theater is the team sport of the arts and nobody has to sit out.
No, that's very true. I always describe theater as the island of misfit toys. We take everyone. It doesn't matter, you know, if you're a really great actor, maybe you're awesome behind the set, behind the stage, whatever. We'll take everybody. And it really does take a huge collaborative effort to, you know, make art in theater. So, yeah.
It does. And to just keep it all, isn't it amazing? I mean, we've been making theater for thousands of years. And one of the things that I love about it is that, you know, there's an opening night and a close. So
yes.
There's always this cycle. And I believe it's a healthy cycle. you know, to go through that process and then start again. Some of us have had the pleasure of actually producing a play more than one time, and it's not the same experience because it's a different team, a different audience. So it's a very, very healthy process.
Yeah, that's actually one of the things I love about theater is that there's an opening night. There's a time when it's going to end and it stops and all of your efforts are pushing towards that one place. There's so few things in life that are sort of like that, that have this kind of deadline that you're shooting for, and you have a very specific point on the horizon that you're, you know, setting sail for, basically.
I agree.
And the sports analogy is very apt because so much like sports, everyone pays attention to the people in the field and forget about all the support and everything that's needed for them to be there. Except for the supporting and technical Oscars or whatever.
That's very true. So in addition to working with teams, how does StrengthsFinder help you as an individual and can help you sort of be a better person and function better?
You are so great at asking questions. So one of the first things that's coming to my mind is that, again, you're leaning into this data, and it's data that you've reported. So, right, it's not somebody else. You know, you've done the survey, right. and it's information coming right from you. So this gives you a new way of looking at yourself. So again, you come to a strengths coaching situation, and you have something that you're longing for. Maybe something's getting in your way. Maybe you're feeling stuck. Maybe you're feeling unsure. And so part of the process of moving through the stuckness, the uncertainty, is to pay attention to what are the things that are giving you energy. Now, among your dominant strengths, these activities that are natural to you, how you think, feel, and behave in the world, these are things that when you're activating those strengths themes, you're actually getting energy. You're feeling alive, you're feeling strong, and you're being energized. So that's a clue that those kinds of activities are good and healthy for you. If, on the other hand, you are having to rely on lesser strengths, we don't say weakness because any strength can be a weakness if it's getting in your way.
I sense a mantra.
So if you have to call upon a lesser strength too much, guess what? No energy. You're going to get depleted. You're going to feel unhappy. You're going to no joy in your life. So by examining those strength themes and thinking about what's missing, is there a strength I'm using too much? Is there a supporting strength that I could turn to more often? You can make some decisions about steps that you want to take in your life, about decisions that you need to make. Recently, well, about a year ago, I was coaching with an amazing woman who was really trying to explore what was going to be next in her life. And would she stay with the organization she was working with, a really important nonprofit where she had been doing great work, but she was also feeling restless. And so we probably spent 9 or 10 months, just in maybe every 6 weeks, we would have a conversation. And lo and behold, one day she told me that she had made a decision. She was going to be leaving that particular post. But she'd also recognized more and more things. She's kind of risk averse and really wants to have a good, solid plan so she could turn to specific strengths to help her feel confident and to help her have a plan. And I've been watching her through this transition, and she's just doing beautifully.
So wonderful to hear. So we need to take a station break. And so we will be right back after this with more of our conversation with Danette McCarthy. And we are back. Welcome back to the Every Woman Show. I am Rachel, and I'm joined by Fiona and my special guest, Danette McCarthy, coming to us from St. Paul, Minnesota. It's like for real winter up there now, isn't it, in St. Paul?
It was, but as I look out my window today, there's no snow on the ground. It's been in the 40s. It's going to be 50 degrees, I think, on Tuesday. So it actually feels like late October. We did have a massive snowfall in the middle of October, though.
Yes. Yeah, who knew? In Minnesota, massive snowfall in October? Yeah.
these things happen.
They do, and they happen all the time up there. So I want to kind of circle back to StrengthsFinder, and one of the things you were talking about, it strikes me as it's a way to sort of develop self-help techniques in a way to sort of, you know, give you those tools that can help you sort of bring you up from the doldrums. And I know right now all of us are experiencing various levels of oppression with the pandemic. And so is that something you can lean on strengths coaching for and the StrengthsFinder?
Absolutely. You know, each of us really does have an expert within. And for reasons that are just studied a lot, sometimes unclear, spoken of often, women in particular can really doubt. It seems that it takes us decades to really own and embrace the intuitive self. That's really sad to me. I so wish that young women were encouraged to be listening to their soul speak, that we would feel confident in listening carefully, that if something's coming to us in a dream or into a random thought or showing up through our journaling, that we would pay close attention and say, oh, there it is again. Instead, it feels that we live in a culture, and the show that was on before this one, we live in a culture where so much of what we do is just not valued, not understood. We're expected to step into boxes and navigate in those boxes. And so if we can even stay curious about the expert within and say, what do I know about me? Where's the evidence about me that can help guide me through this time? Then you have a step, even if it's a baby step, in the right direction, the direction of finding self and caring for self.
No, that is a really good point. I know that whenever I am faced with a huge task, an enormous task, something that seems absolutely insurmountable, one of the things my partner, Margaret, has brought up to me is that she brings up this analogy of, you know, how do you eat an elephant? Well, you don't eat it all at once. You eat it one tiny bite at a time. And eventually, you've eaten the elephant, i.e., you've conquered this thing that you're trying to do. So yes, tiny steps and knowing more about yourself, I think, will help you identify those things that can give you a boost and maybe help you in these times.
I just think it's critical. I think it all, you know, ultimately, it's the same for all of us. We truly and really only have control over one person on the planet.
Yes.
One. And that's ourselves. And it's so easy to get distracted by or burdened by or undone by the things around us. And some of us live in a whole lot more privilege than another. I probably never thought of myself as particularly privileged, but there's so many things that I don't have to worry about.
Yes.
And so being able to look myself in the mirror and saying, okay, this is me, this is what I know to be true, and what am I going to do about it? You know, what am I going to let go of? What am I going to put on my to-don't list today? And how am I going to live my best life? And every day is going to be different. Some days my best might be just getting out of bed.
Yeah, I think that's really... that is such an important lesson to learn, especially now during the pandemic. You know, there's been this theme about, you know, oh gosh, I have all this time at home. I should learn to play a guitar. I should learn a new language. And in fact, what we really need to do is learn how to survive in this radically different environment that we're all living in right now.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that brain science is going to be fascinating to see what the brain scientists say coming out of this time. But I think our primal brains are fixated on the fact that there's so much uncertainty, and that is causing us a great deal of fear. Maybe our amygdalas have been taken hostage a bit because this fear is real. We don't know the what and the when of it. And so the fear is real. and to be able to nest a bit, take care of ourselves, and to stop this idea of let's not should on ourselves, right? Oh, I mean, we don't need to try to self-shame into writing a novel, creating our next book of poetry. How about that? Whatever, right. Fill in the blank. Yeah, let's go easy. Let's go easy on ourselves right now. Let's take good care. And again, exploring what in the world our purpose is in this short time we have on the planet.
No, that's really good advice and a really good point. So one of the things that sort of dovetails with the strengths coaching is a book that you, I know that is very close to you, The Five Agreements. Could you talk a little bit about that and how that sort of influenced you?
Oh, I could talk about it for a long time. Let's see if I can do it quickly. First of all, I came to know The Four Agreements, and then Don Miguel Ruiz, I think 20 years after he first published The Four Agreements, came up with The Fifth Agreement. And again, this material came to me at a time in my life that I think that I was pretty regularly caught up in some self-made chaos around how I should be and how to take care of all the multiplicity of things that were coming inward toward me. I might often feel like there were a dozen Frisbees coming my way and I had to catch them all and send them back all out. And so it really resonated with me to read these words. And so they're simple. And you can find it on the web. You can easily get copies of the books. They've been bestsellers over decades. But the first four agreements are, you know, be impeccable with your word. Always do your best. Don't make assumptions. And don't take things personally. Now, each of those agreements even has a short description and a longer description, but you get the gist of it. I mean, to be impeccable with your word really means to not use your good word against yourself or others. Sure. To always do your best also recognizes that every day is different. Your best one day or one hour won't be the same as another day. So doing your best within the context of how am I doing today? Don't make assumptions. You know, so much drama comes in our lives because we make an assumption about what someone is thinking, saying, doing. And it takes an act of courage sometimes to just say, now, wait a minute, time out. What did you mean by that? Right. You know, sometimes it's amazing what you can learn was really going on behind something that you heard or saw. Don't take things personally has always been tough for me. And I think as an artist and as a creative, that's part of the reason why I put a lot of myself out there. And so if I hear something that feels like criticism or something like that, yes. There's a lot of things. But, you know, to be able to say, okay, I'm doing my best, I'm bringing my best, and if somebody else has a reaction that is feels like it's going against me, that's theirs. You know, that's theirs, and sorry. I need to be able to let it stay there. And then Ruiz brought in, be skeptical, but learn to listen.
And that's the fifth.
Now, that was an agreement.
One, right?
Yep, go
okay.
ahead.
Oh, and that's the fifth agreement, right?
That's the fifth, okay. Yes. That's the fifth. And that one was very difficult for me because I thought that the word but kind of negates, and I needed to spend some time with it. So this idea is that with the five agreements, that let's say Fiona, Rachel, and Danette said, yes, we're going to embrace the five agreements. These are five agreements that are important to us. They create a roadmap for how to be. There are agreements with each other. And if we were to agree that healthy skepticism is a positive thing, and we learned to listen, just think about how transformative that would be. Yeah. We can be skeptical as long as we're listening.
Yeah, that is a really powerful way to start thinking, and in some ways, a subtle shift in just how you perceive things. I know there's a couple of things that really resonate with me. One of them, as women, we often take things very personally because I know myself, I'm very nurturing and I want to help people. And boy, if I get some kind of criticism or I feel like I failed in some way, that goes right to the core of me usually. And it's really hard to sort of negate that feeling.
It can be impossible. Plus, and Rachel, I spoke about this with you recently. There's a thing called relational aggression, And it's the primary way that girls bully other girls.
Right.
And we learn as very, very young children that that somebody can hurt us through the relationship.
Right.
And so it's like our radar is up for that. And that makes it very, very difficult to show skepticism, to question, to be curious, because it's dangerous. So we as women, taking those steps into being encouraging of each other, and especially helping young girls understand what relational aggression is and not choose it,
yes.
is going to take a lot of work to shift that culture. We cannot do that overnight, but we can do it. We can do it together.
Right, yes.
I think part of it is also that boys are taught from a fairly early age that if they fail, that's okay, you tried, try again. You'll succeed next time. And girls so often are rewarded on how they behave rather than on achievement and not taught that it's okay to fail. So you're always trying to be perfect and blame yourself when you're not perfect and when you don't behave exactly right because of that early socialization that even though you might consciously reject it, it's still giving you that little voice in the back of your head that keeps undercutting you.
So true. And then what we know about brain science is that when we start to go through puberty as women, our brains are flooded with hormones that actually kind of dispose us to the getting along. We start to feel like the socialization factor is more important than anything else. And so even risk-taking starts to shift, and failure is even more dramatic and probably traumatic for some because maybe we have failed these others. We have to really be very conscientious in our raising of young girls and as we support each other as women.
Absolutely. You have to be, you know, be the woman who is going to fix the crown on the other woman as opposed to point out that it's crooked.
Absolutely.
It's a simplistic way to look at it, but it's really true. It is really true. And there's a lot of power, too, in helping your fellow humans, but especially helping other women, because it seems like, you know, a lot of times we do take these things very, very personally. And sometimes, you know, some women, their reaction is to sort of put someone else down to prop themselves up, which is ultimately, you know, self-defeating. So we need to take another station break. But when we come back, we will talk a little bit more with our special guest, Danette McCarthy. Stay tuned.
Jaws of Justice Radio investigates how we can achieve justice from a system of laws deeply rooted in economic, political, and social inequality. We strive to dispel misconceptions created by the news and entertainment industries, as well as the fear-mongering of the political system.
And welcome back to the Every Woman Show. I am Rachel here with my special guest, Danette McCarthy. Fiona is also joining us via Zoom. Una had to step out. She wasn't feeling well, so she has actually stepped out. She's not just being silent, although I'm sure she's listening and with rapt attention on her way home. But we wish her the best, and hopefully she can feel better soon. So one of the things that strikes me, Danette, is I posed the question, you know, what was your favorite thing to do? And you immediately went to, I like to prop other people up and I like to help other people. So what do you do for yourself? Who is propping up Danette, and who what drives you personally when you're putting out so much energy to other people in your life?
Well, I'm going to come right back around to StrengthsFinder because these are things that I didn't know about me. And during the pandemic, I learned some new things, too, that are important. But so first of all, one of my top strengths themes is achiever, which means that I really do like to get a lot of things done and do a lot of things and kind of get to a finish line. Also, one of my top 10 strengths themes is activator, so I like to start things as well. And that's why, again, that cycle of theater can be good for me.
Yes.
So it is actually very energizing and very rewarding for me to be involved in various things and to be juggling. Now, I can do that too much. If I'm not careful, there's the workaholism and the drivenness that can just be way, way too much. And that's where I turn to some of my other strengths themes. Another important of my top five strengths themes is connectedness. And this is a theme that can look like spirituality. It can look like my faith in humankind and in all beings. Yes. All beings. And so time in nature is extremely important to me, extremely. I'm very fortunate to live in a neighborhood that has beautiful perennial gardens and old trees and architecture that is 100 years old around every corner. And so being outside is a very stimulating thing for me, and it helps me remember that child I was in the woods with my dog. And that's another thing. My husband and I have just a little over a year old dog, and being outside with Kip and playing with Kip is really, really good for me. Finally, because several of my strengths are in a strategic thinking kind of domain, being in relationships and conversations with others about ideas and about what to do about those ideas is also very energizing. And so I am blessed with many friends who love to be in those conversations. Like, we can be in those conversations and wrestle with big ideas or little ideas and support each other and be in those conversations. And those things help keep me, keep me fed, keep me nourished. One area that I fall down on a lot during times like this is the self-care that has to do with eating and exercise. Oh. I can be an emotional eater, and I can also delay and defer getting out and doing the kind of exercise I love most. I love to swim, a little hard to do right now. I love to bike, not as hard to do, but easy to defer those things.
Yes.
So I also need to look to StrengthsFinder, if I want, as a strategy, and to say, okay, how can I help keep myself on task of some self-care? So again, it's just one way to help me take care of me, because ultimately I'm responsible for that. That said, I'm very blessed also to be in a marriage with a poet. And so getting a chance to read Bill's words and to be in a conversation about the work that he's working on is really lovely.
No, that is really amazing. And I know it was sort of a big shift for you, because you've lived most of your life as a strong, independent woman who has literally taken care of herself and done things for herself. And now you're in this really amazing partnership with your husband.
It really was a big shift. And sometimes I feel really sorry for my husband. You know, he is a great guy who is drawn to and cares about and celebrates strong women. Our daughter, my bonus daughter, his daughter, Maura, is a strong woman. My daughter, Catherine, is a strong woman. And it can be complicated to be in a relationship with a strong woman.
Absolutely.
But yes, 5 years ago, so we are still not even five, four and a half years ago, we got married. Mm-hmm. And so we're still in the early stages of this marriage, and we're learning so much. And again, being an independent, strong woman can be difficult in negotiating your path. It still comes back to those things that I talked about earlier with regard to a team. We are a team, so we need to be able to talk about what's working, to need to be able to strategize about how to bring out the best in each other and encourage each other. So there you go.
No, that's amazing. So we have about a minute left before we need to leave. Do you have any sort of final thoughts you'd like to leave us with here?
Wow, how to spend a minute.
I know, right? Hmm. No pressure, but all the pressure.
Well, you know, Rachel, it was so interesting listening to the closing 15 minutes or so of the show before this.
Yes.
One of the things, I believe that show was quoting Gloria Steinem, and she said something like, if you don't have the information, you can't act on it.
Right.
Now, of course, they're talking there. That show was about economics and about, you know, not counting the contributions, the massive contributions of women who weren't necessarily on a payroll someplace. And I can't wait to look at that movie, by the way. But, you know, we need to be able to look at the information that we have. Who are we?
Right.
Who's inside of us? What were we born to do? What is our purpose? You know, and sometimes it can be very difficult to chew on those questions. And if you don't feel supported in that discovery, it can just be a very, very difficult journey. So remember, however you're going to seek the information, about your own journey, about your own self, there is an expert inside.
Yes.
She is in there, and she wants to be known, and she might be kind of shy sometimes.
No, I agree with that. Thank you so much. Those are great parting words. And thank you so much, Danette McCarthy, for joining us this week on Every Woman. Urban Connections is next. I am Rachel, and we will see you next week.